student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Today is Friday, March 8th. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm Jamie Hoholuck. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia, to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to our listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It is 5:06 p.m. and time for another full hour of independent news. In honor of International Women's Day, today's show will feature content focused on women in the Lower Mainland. We'll be playing interviews conducted with Elise Jacobson from the Vancouver Chapter of Women Action and Media, a member of the TELUS Vancouver Community Board, the co-conductors and pianists of the University Women's Ensemble, UBC pro-life and pro-choice advocates, as well as a representative from the Downtown Eastside Women's Shelter, and weather and a special guest.
All this, plus your Friday weather forecast brought to you by the UBC Storm Club, right here on News 101, your source for independent news. And now for your UBC campus and local headlines.
So first up, we'll be talking with our in-studio guest, Pamela Vallejos. Pamela is a UBC student who's involved with UBC Amnesty International, and we invited her in today to give her perspective on International Women's Day. So Pamela, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we're doing a lot of special content at CITR for International Women's Day, because we think it's really important just to have women represented in the media, and we are a media outlet, of course. So I just wanted to get some of your perspective, both as a student and as a member of UBC Amnesty International, on why it's something that's important for us to remember and celebrate.
Well, it's very important to remember, to celebrate the progress that women have made in history, as well as the issues that we still encounter every day. So International Women's Day is the perfect day for this. It's just reminding us of the progress. Like, for example, at UBC, in the pay equity department, they've done amazing work. They did research that identified a 2% gender bias in wages and actually gave every female faculty member a 2% pay raise. So that's progress for women's rights. But then again, we also need to remember that there's a lot of work to be done, especially in the media. Mm-hmm. We live in a very privileged location. I mean, Canada, women's rights is very, like, very out there, and but there's still work to be done.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to note that I was reading a bunch of stats that came out, was released in a big study today about basically women and gender equality in a lot of countries around the world, and they had noticed that Canada is actually the second best for basically physical and sexual violence against women, and that's with a rate of 7%. And I think it's still quite sad that with a rate of 7% domestic and gender-based violence in Canada, it still is, we're still one of the top in the world, really, for that.
Yeah, with Amnesty International UBC, we actually did a fundraiser about sexualized violence in regards to Aboriginal women. It's an amnesty campaign of Amnesty International Canada, mm-hmm. called No More Stolen Sisters, and they're pretty much trying to raise awareness about the violence and sexualized violence that mm-hmm. Aboriginal women face in Canada, because it's usually not very publicized in the media, mm-hmm. and it's definitely something that Canadians should be more aware of and should be fighting for justice for.
Yeah, and I think it's great because International Women's Day is both a celebration of, as you mentioned, the progress that we've made and the strength that women have shown in history and just in getting to where we are and in all walks of life and in all different sorts of representation. And it's also just a point of remembrance for the struggle and for campaigns, like you mentioned, for Stolen Sisters and so on.
Yeah, it's very important also to just educate yourself on the issues, and a day like this is perfect because there's so many articles that are coming out. Like you mentioned, the study that you read. I read a study talking about which countries are at the top of their game when it comes to gender equality. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to see countries that you wouldn't really expect. Mm-hmm. I also read another article about quotas in women in government and mm-hmm. the repercussions with that, or mm-hmm. how people are interpreting that. So this mm-hmm. is definitely the day to get out there and read about these issues.
Yeah, definitely a lot of nuanced issues and nuanced discussion that can be had. And I think it's important to remember the nuances in that as well, right? It's not solely for things like quotas or so on, there's definitely a lot of discussion and different perspectives to bring out to there as well. Yeah, in terms of Amnesty, I mean, you mentioned that you guys have that campaign. Is there anything else that you guys are up to that listeners should know about?
Well, we're going to have an open mic on Thursday at Benny's Cafe. It's a entrance by donation. It's a fundraiser for our club, Amnesty International UBC, and it's going to be a fun night. It's all ages, but there will be beer for those who are 19 plus. So if anyone wants to come out to this, to that and support our club.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks, Pamela, for taking your time and chatting with us today about your thoughts. And we're going to move on to some of our recorded content for today. So thanks.
Yeah, next we have an interview with the conductors and pianists of the University Women's Ensemble talking about the importance of women-only singing groups and women's voices having an on and off campus presence in performances. We are also happy to present a short piece performed by the Women's Ensemble in their concert in February.
Welcome to CITR 101.9 FM.
Thank you.
If you guys want to introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Peggy Hua, and this is
Hussein John Muhammad.
And we're the co-directors of UBC Women's Ensemble.
Great. So what kind of music do you guys perform?
Oh, tons. Like, we go from classical, we go into pop, we go into folk. Song, mm-hmm. World music.
Okay. Yeah. Do you focus on, you know, trying to perform works written by women, for women, or?
We do works just for women, like, but we also have some women composers, such as Eleanor Daly, who's one of the greatest Canadian female composers.
Okay. Because this is International Women's Day, you guys talk about the empowering aspect of a women's choir.
Well, some of the women have already shared with us how that time when we sing together, when we create beautiful music together, is a time which is the best part of their week. You can let go of all your stresses. And I've worked a lot with mixed choirs. Mm-hmm. And what I find working with a women's choir is there's such a feeling of comfort and community and belonging. Mm-hmm. And I know there people have, you know, they might have an issue, a personal issue, or some struggling at school or whatever. But when we come together, we find a way to be strong with each other. And it's a beautiful experience to have women together singing like that. And we meet twice a week. It's 1.5 hours on Monday and Wednesday. Right now it's 4:30 to 6 o'clock.
Yes.
And it's actually a course which you can take for credit. It's open to anyone on campus on any from any faculty.
Okay. Nice. You have to be a woman, I'm assuming?
Yes, it's a women's ensemble.
That's the only criteria, yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. And so will that be offered next year as well?
Absolutely.
My name is Tiffany Chen. I'm the pianist for the UBC Women's Choir. In terms of just the impact of this choir, I think what's really nice about this choir is I feel like there's a strong connection between all the members of the choir. It's a safe environment where mm-hmm. people can just, like Hussein was saying, let go of their stress for the day and just you're making music together, and there's a strong sense of community within our choir, and I think that comes through in performances, and that's something really empowering.
Now, how many people are in your choir?
We have about 26 people.
Okay.
Yeah, 26 singers.
Have you guys done any, like, collaborative work with any of the other women's groups on campus?
Because we're still growing as a group, you know, there, the possibilities are endless in terms of partnerships and collaboration with other...
I feel like that's a good avenue to explore, to work with women's groups on campus.
And we perform on campus and off campus. So we performed a Remembrance Day concert for the annual UBC Remembrance Day concert at the War Memorial Gym. And then we sang at a concert for peace on Remembrance Day in Richmond. We have guest conductors come in and work with us. And
yes.
So we do quite a range of activities for sure.
Oh, yeah, and then we go out for dinner.
I was just going to ask that. Like, if you guys, you know, try to foster a sense of community outside of the choir.
Absolutely. Chocolate and food plays a big role.
Yes.
So is it, like, do you guys have, like, a big swell of first years, or is it mostly, like, third and fourth years?
It's a good mix.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So come out to our concert on April 3rd at 7:30 p.m. In the music at the music school, the Roy Barnett Recital Hall.
And it's a free concert.
The reception to follow.
Awesome. Thank you guys very much for coming in. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and good luck with your concert.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks to the University Women's Ensemble for that interview. And we did have a track of theirs to play, but unfortunately, due to some technical difficulties, we're not going to be able to get that up for you, unfortunately. But as I mentioned, they do have an upcoming concert, so be sure to check that out. And it'll be posted on our Facebook page. Next up, we have an interview with Elise Jacobson from Women Action in the Media. I spoke to her earlier today about what WAM is and what they do both in Vancouver and around the world. Elise, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, can you tell us a bit about Women Action in the Media?
Yeah, Women Action in the Media, or WAM as it's called for short, was started a few years ago in Boston by a woman named Jacqueline Friedman. And it's now spread to cities all over the U.S. and Canada. WAM Vancouver was the first Canadian chapter, but there is now a chapter in Ottawa as well. And there are chapters in addition to Boston, also New York and L.A. and several other cities in the U.S.
And so, of course, from the very name of Women Action, the media can kind of guess that the core values are something to do with having more female representation in the media and so on. Can you tell us a bit about what specific actions you guys take to achieve this goal?
Do you mean WAM Vancouver specifically, or the organization?
Yeah, WAM Vancouver.
Okay, well, WAM Vancouver has only existed really since 2011, so we're sort of in our second full year, I guess, or third full year. And it started out with a conference, a community conference that was planned very last minute. And a young journalist from Vancouver named Joanna Chu was really the driving force behind starting that all up. Last year, in 2012, we had another conference that was planned throughout the previous year, so it was a little better organized. And our latest series of events is something we call Monday Media Mutiny. It's an event that happens on the third Monday of every month. Basically, what it is we gather all interested individuals in a predetermined location, and we perform a quick action that challenges objectification and sexism in the media, in various forms of media. So, for example, at the last one, we got together and we made little bookmarks and postcards that had messages on them of body positivity and protests against objectification in the media. And the goal was to have these things with us that we can insert in magazines or books or other publications that we see that are promoting sexism and negative stereotypes.
So you mentioned that like some of these events are really trying to combat negative stereotypes of women in the media. And stuff like that. What do you think are some of the key problems facing women in media, both in participation and in representation?
Well, there are a lot, actually. I was just before you called, I was kind of going over this, reviewing some of the stats of, you know, recent media representation for women. Generally, the vast majority of the media that we all consume, all forms of media, is predominantly produced and controlled by men, particularly white men. In film, for example, in 2008, only 6 of the top 50 grossing films starred or were focused on women. Women were only 9% of directors and 12% of writers in film in general. In television, too, women are only about 9% of directors and 23% of executive producers of television. Generally, in news media, the latest stat was that race and gender issues only account for about 1% of overall news coverage. So, so that's kind of the, I mean, those are just a couple of things. If anyone wants to see more stats, there's a lot listed on the website at womenactionmedia.org. But yeah, that's kind of the overall goal of WAM, is to achieve greater gender parity in media production and representation of women in the media.
Do you think it's more likely to come from a groundswell of participation, or do you think there's something structurally inherent in the way the media is set up that's preventing involvement or the representation of women?
It's hard to say. I think that there are a lot of factors at play. Part of it is, you know, just that sometimes old traditions die hard. You know, if media traditionally has been controlled by men, it will always take a while for women to really break into the market and you know, achieve equal status. And I think that, yeah, some, you know, quite a few agencies of media are hostile and unwelcoming to women, for sure. It can be a tough industry for women to work in.
Could you speak a bit to how you got involved with WAM and what brought you to the organization?
Yeah, for sure. I have known about WAM for a number of years, just sort of loosely. And when Joanna was planning the conference in 2011, very last minute, she asked me if I would kind of be on the committee of volunteers and help out with planning the conference. And after that conference, we decided to kind of establish a core of organizers, kind of a core organizing committee, and I decided that I would like to be on that. So I've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. During your involvement with WAM, do you feel like you've seen any changes to media access or representation, even in such a short time?
You know something, to be totally honest, I think just in the time that I've been involved with WAM, I haven't really seen the kind of structural changes that I would like to see, or any even kind of baby steps. I mean, I was just reading recently about how depictions of violence against women have actually gone up in recent years in television, especially violence against young women, and just in the last few years, it's like those depictions are increasing, and women still, you know, female characters still only have something like 30% of speaking roles in movies or something like that. And so I wish I could say that, yeah, we've been making progress over the years, but I haven't really seen any yet. But I am hopeful. I mean, I really look forward to a day when, you know, films that are made by women of color, you know, are as successful and popular as films made by white men that star white men. And when more of the news media is representing women's voices and women's perspectives, and, you know, when there's just some more parity and justice in the whole field.
Yeah. If people want to learn more about WAM, where can they find out more?
Well, WAM International's website is womenactionmedia.org. And yeah, like I said before, you can learn more about why WAM is necessary and kind of what WAM does as an international organization and that sort of thing. And WAM Vancouver is also on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMVancouver. We're on Twitter, we have a WordPress, everything.
Thank you very much for giving us your time and sharing your thoughts with us today, Elise.
Oh, for sure. Thank you so much for having me.
Once again, that was Elise Jacobson with the group WAM. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay with us for weather and to hear our interview with Christina, who has served on the TELUS Vancouver Community Board and will be talking about her experiences volunteering in Vancouver.
I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
I'm at war. I'm at war with myself. I'm at war with you. I'm at war with everybody. That's why I don't do drugs. because I don't want to be numb. I want to feel the pain. I want the clarity of the challenge. I want to win. I want to kick in the head. I want to tear the throat box out. I want to smash in the lungs. I want to kick in the rib cage. I want to split the spine. And I want to use your phone, make love to your wife, sister, eat your dog, and leave your house with a good cassette.
CITR 101.9 FM, where there's just a little bit of Kim Fowley in each and every one of us.
No, I don't think so.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. We now have a brief weather report, courtesy of Environment Canada.
All right, tonight a few clouds, fog patches developing before morning, low is positive 2. Saturday, a mix of sun and cloud, clearing late in the morning, fog patches dissipating in the morning, high of 11. Saturday night, Saturday night is increasing cloudiness, 30% chance of showers overnight, and a low of 6. And then Sunday, cloudy with 30% chance of showers with a high of 9.
Awesome. So that was your weekend weather report brought to you by Environment Canada, not UBC Storm Club today. We gave them the day off. But next up, we bring you an interview with Christina, done by our co-director Morgan Yee, about her experiences volunteering in Vancouver and her time spent on the TELUS Vancouver Community Board.
Welcome to News 101. It's great to have you on. So, can you just explain to the listeners how you've been involved in community work in Vancouver?
Sure. So a little bit about myself. I was born and raised in Vancouver, and I just graduated from UBC last year, 2012, and I did my degree in arts with a double major in English Lit and Asian Studies. And so how I really got involved with community work is actually when I was 14 and I was in grade 9, I was going to Eric Hammer Secondary School in Vancouver, and I was walking around at the Chinatown Night Market with my mom, and there was this booth from Success, which is a nonprofit social service organization based in Chinatown and one of the largest not-for-profit organizations serving new immigrants in Western Canada, basically. So I joined their program that they were advertising at the Chinatown Night Market, which is called the Youth Leadership Millennium Program, or YLM for short. And basically that program is a 7-month program where youth from all over the Lower Mainland get together, and they basically go through a series of leadership training, team building exercises, physical like expeditions, public speaking. So basically like very holistic, all well-rounded kind of program trying to, you know, gear towards developing your leadership skills as a youth and to figure out what you're good at, what you're passionate about, and how to work with other people to build on that, to create something that you can contribute back to the community. So I did that program in 2004 when I was 14, and then I went back basically every year. I loved it so much, I went back every year, and still doing it, almost 10 years now. And really that was sort of like the first stop, I guess, on my kind of journey in like community work. Mm-hmm. And as a result of my involvement in the Success YLM program, I've been very fortunate to meet a lot of new people and to kind of through them kind of get my foot in the door with lots of different organizations throughout the Lower Mainland.
You said you were on the TELUS Vancouver Community Board?
Yeah.
So how long have you been working with that group?
The TELUS Vancouver Community Board is comprised of a board, basically half internal members, so employees of TELUS, and the other half is sort of external community leaders who kind of have like a first-hand look at what the needs are in the community in terms of grassroots organizations and initiatives. Mm-hmm. So we come from, you know, education background, women, sports, environment, well-being, health, well-being, arts and culture. So there's a real diversity there. And so my term was for 3 years. So from 2009 to 2012 was when I was active on the board. And we would meet several times a year to go through applications that organizations, local community groups throughout the Lower Mainland would, you know, submit grant applications to mm-hmm. TELUS, grassroots and small organizations that are very in touch with what their neighborhood or their the groups that they're working with, they really know what mm-hmm. they need, and so they have a very clear picture of that, and they're able to articulate it. And, so I served on the board for 3 years there, and I learned so much about, you know, what that the community is actually very diverse, and there are a lot of people that really do need our help, whether it's, you know, yes, there's the financial part of it, but there's also how to raise awareness for these groups and raise awareness for these issues. Mm-hmm. And just how to bring shed light on it for people that just aren't really not necessarily like aware of what's going on in
right.
the community. Yeah, so bringing exposure to that.
So do you guys have a, you know, like a volunteer base that you draw from as well? Like, if you say, if you have, you know, if United Way is like, oh, we need 7 servers,
mm-hmm.
do you have a pool of applicants that you could be like, okay, here, you, and you can all go help? Do you guys function in that way at all?
I guess as a board, like, a lot of us have, especially the people, I'm the youth member, so I tend to have the most free time out of, like,
yeah.
everyone in the board.
And do you use, perhaps, like, your connections to actually draw people in as well into volunteering?
For sure, yeah. I mean, not just limited to, like, the TELUS Vancouver community board. So I just find that as I grow older and as I kind of do more volunteer work, I get the chance to meet more people, and people, you know, like, 6 degrees of separation,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I might meet somebody from, like, this organization in downtown, and then, like, they will happen to have, you know, a brother or sister that's in another organization, and through them I'll join, and just kind of connecting people. I really like that aspect of volunteering. Because it's really great to do things, you know, like, volunteer yourself, but when you're, I find, like, the greatest satisfaction as sort of, like, a youth mentor, which is what I do also
mm-hmm.
as well, mentorship, is to be able to connect people and have them discover through, like, working on projects with other people what they like to do. And then once they kind of can tap into that, it's like suddenly, you know, there's something that is driving them to come back to do more and to discover that and build on that. I think that's very satisfying as, like, a youth mentor. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Through your work with the TELUS Vancouver Community Board.
Yeah, it's a mouthful.
So you've worked with, you know, many groups, and you know something about the Young Women's Christian Association?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So what does that group in particular do for women, do you think? Like, how does that, I mean, what is the benefit of an all, like, so like a woman-focused group?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so with the YWCA Metro Vancouver, actually, my first kind of encounter with them was actually taking a Saturday class with my mom, and that was really awesome. I got to kind of have some, you know, one-on-one time with my mom and, you know, talk to her and kind of, like, yeah, build our relationship. And so I do know that with YWCA, I think one of the greatest things about it is that it has a really big scope, a very large scope, and it's very diverse. There's a lot of people in the organization doing many, many different initiatives. But the key is that they're all sort of, they're all for this kind of vision, which is advancing, like, women's equality and women's rights and making, you know, like, the future generations of women and families, empowering them and giving them better opportunities. And I think the advantage of having, like, an all-women's group, I know for sure that YWCA isn't, like, they're open to, like, volunteers from all different backgrounds, and
yeah.
you don't necessarily have to be female. But I think there's definitely a certain level of, you know, unity and, like, comfort, actually, when you're
mm-hmm.
working with people that are, you know, within the same kind of mindset as you. And so it's a very safe and welcoming space, and I think you can get much further, you know, working as a team with the same kind of goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's sort of one key thing that makes the YWCA so special and unique. Yeah.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
So what services are offered by the YWCA?
So there are, 5 main areas that YWCA provides services in. The first one being housing. So they do partner with the BC Housing for Rental Assistance Program, serving, like, particularly vulnerable communities such as the Downtown East Side. The second area is in early learning and childhood care. So they've been trying to develop, working with, like, research scientists on how to develop a universal child care plan for Canada, and that's a very exciting research project and something that I'm very interested personally. Mm-hmm. The third area is in employment and economic opportunity. So there's a lot of, you know, fairs and networking that YWCA organizes for women to give them opportunities to network and to get in, to engage with other, you know, business leaders in the community. And the fourth area is in mentorship. So in sort of all stages in a woman's life, basically from, you know, high school to university into their career and into like community leadership, there are mentorship opportunities that YWCA organizes. And the last but not least area that of service is in legal education and resources. So sort of we know that, you know, not everybody it's sort of like legal services isn't like the most kind of well-known or like well-understood thing,
right,
accessible thing for the average person. So it's really bringing that into more more of an accessible place for like women in the Lower Mainland.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. And do you know if they're doing anything special for International Women's Day?
Yeah, so YWCA actually has a very, it has one of the most well-known and prestigious, I guess, awards, and it's called the YWCA of Metro Vancouver Women of Distinction Awards, and it's an annual awards to celebrate the accomplishments and achievements of women in their area. So whether it's in education, community involvement, volunteerism, philanthropy, business, innovation, technology, you name it, there's a category out there. And it really just kind of honors like women's contributions to these areas and how they're furthering kind of being role models for other women in the community.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's great. And then just if listeners are interested in, you know, in getting involved with either the YWCA or other initiatives, what would you suggest to them?
For sure. So I think, you know, there's really no right way or only way to get involved in the community. So I would suggest going to, you know, finding out what you enjoy doing, like what you enjoy, what your passion and volunteering is. For example, YWCA, a great way to start is actually just by going onto their website, which is www.ywcavan.org. And there are it's very clearly listed on their website, many, many different ways that you can, you know, get involved, such as being like a mentor, being a donor, a volunteer, or a member of the organization. And another way that's, you know, more casual, I think, and probably more fun, is through human interaction. So you probably have friends or, you know, mentors or co-workers, for example, fellow students, classmates that are involved in initiatives already. And just by like striking up conversation with them and finding out what they're doing and what groups they're involved with, and dropping by at the next event or the next sort of activities that they're planning. And it doesn't take much, you know, just getting your foot in the door and trying something new, keeping an open mind, and who knows, you may find something that becomes a lifelong passion.
Well, perfect. Thank you very much, Christina.
Yeah, thank you, Morgan.
Thanks for coming in, and yeah, good luck with your future volunteering efforts.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you to Christina for that interview. Next up, we have an interview with Fiona York from the Downtown Eastside Women's Shelter.
Joan, thank you for taking the time to chat with us today.
Thank you very much, and happy International Women's Day.
Happy International Women's Day to you as well. Yeah, we've got some special broadcasting going on today at CITR with only content, so it's pretty exciting for us over here as well. But could you tell me a bit, first of all, about the Downtown Eastside Women's Center and what it is that you do?
Sure. So we're based, obviously, in the Downtown Eastside, and we have been in the Downtown Eastside for over 35 years. We're actually celebrating our official 35th anniversary this year. So we were established in 1978, but in fact, even prior to 1978, in the late 60s, we were offering services for women in the community and then became officially registered as a society in 1978. Mm-hmm. And the Downtown Eastside Women's Center is kind of part of a tradition of women's centers or women's resource centers that exist in Canada and in North America, and I'm sure other countries as well, where it's kind of a resource place and a meeting place for women in different communities. And of course, in the Downtown Eastside, there is very specific needs and a need for a place for women to have a safe place to go and access the services and resources. And so that's why the Downtown Eastside Women's Center was established. We offer kind of a range of services, and it's on about two or three different levels. So our mission statement is that we provide for basic needs and also tools for positive change, and what that means is that we both operate as a frontline service where we're providing for basic necessities like a safe place to go, showers and toilets that are safe, and that's very important for the community because it's often rare for women to be able to access some safe services, and also basic needs as in meals. So we have a food program and we serve a hot lunch every day, hot nutritious lunch, and that is one of the most important things that we offer because that's why many of the women visit the center. And then also clothing, toiletries, we're a mailing address for many women, phones, so all the basic needs. But at the same time, when women are accessing the center, they have access to a whole range of other services, such as victim services, housing outreach, which is so important in the community, having support to find safe, secure, appropriate housing. We also do HIV outreach, and we have advocates. We have some health services and supports, and we do programming as well, so kind of a whole range of supports to help to make more long-term positive changes.
And as you mentioned, you've been around for many years now. Do you think there have been any key changes you've seen in the community or in the issues facing women during this time?
I think actually something that's kind of interesting is that there haven't really been any major changes, which is, it's interesting when you think about all the changes that have happened in Vancouver and in the communities, and when you think of the Downtown Eastside, and maybe think, you know, in some ways there's talk about things changing or improving in the Downtown Eastside, but in fact what we see is that we're often seeing more women than we've seen in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways we could say that the needs are actually growing rather than being addressed or being reduced. So the numbers are always growing.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things that we can say over the years looking back, just at the number of women that are visiting the center. We know that we see about 300 women a day, women and children, coming through the doors, which is huge. It's a large number, and we're open 7 days a week, so mm-hmm. that's a lot of women. And when you look back, even just over a couple of years, the service we provided, we know that the numbers have gone up over that time. So it's kind of a surprise when you think about just overall changes in terms of housing and income in the city.
Yeah.
The fact that, in fact, the numbers are growing and not reducing.
And why do you think that is?
It's kind of hard to say, and I'm not probably able to really capture all of the reasons why that might happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's maybe a sort of priorities and attitudes. That there's like societal things and things that are systemic. There are policy changes. There have been changes, for example, I guess housing and social assistance would be a number of
mm-hmm.
the bigger areas, and those are things that are based on policy, and policy is often the result of kind of priorities and attitudes for people who are making those policy decisions,
mm-hmm.
and so it might just be that there's not enough awareness or just a lack of attention or not thinking that those are important issues, so not those things not really being addressed. There's less and less housing. The population is growing. Women are a large portion of the population in the Downtown Eastside, but there's very little housing options available for women, and
mm-hmm.
Especially safe, secure housing, and especially also for women with families and things, you know, spaces that are going to be safe for kids or access or having access to kids. So I think for all of those things, and social assistance, of course, being another big one where the levels have not grown over the years, while at the same time costs, of course, increase all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the gap just gets bigger and bigger.
Of course, yeah. Well, I mean, it obviously sounds like you guys provide a huge service to the community, and so that is very important for so many women facing a variety of different problems. Can you just give us a few of your comments on International Women's Day and why it's important to still have that and keep that in mind?
Sure, and actually I should say that one of the other things that we do, as well as as I was describing the basic needs and the long-term change issues, one of the other things that we do, and one of our actual official purposes, is to draw awareness to issues that face the community and provide
mm-hmm.
education. And so we do a lot in terms of social justice and activism work, and we have many women at the center who are members and long-term members who are very, very active in the community and have done a lot to try to educate, draw attention to some of the issues that we've been talking about. And so for International Women's Day, I guess what I would say is that not only are there very many issues that affect women and women in the Downtown Eastside, and but also that women have been so active and so strong in trying to resist and counter some of those issues. Mm-hmm. And so thinking of International Women's Day, then I think of how strong women have been to resist many of the things that happen and that affect women disproportionately. Mm-hmm. And even thinking of things like I Don't Know More, and you know how that was like a women's movement when it started, and you know how amazing it is that women have accomplished so much and how strong that resistance is, and mm-hmm. just to see that continuing.
Yeah. And if people want to get more involved or help out or draw awareness to some of the issues facing on the Downtown Eastside, what would you recommend that they do?
If you specifically wanted to be involved or support the Downtown Eastside Women's Center, there's a few ways. You can find more information on our website, but of course we're always resources are always one of our challenges, so we're always happy to accept either financial or in-kind donations. So we accept donations of clothing and toiletries, food, cash, of course, and we're also always happy to accept volunteers. We do volunteer orientations once a month, usually the first Sunday of the month at 11 a.m. And I think also just the other way is to become educated about issues, not only in the Downtown Eastside or women in the Downtown Eastside, but those sort of like social policy issues that can have an impact either on the provincial level, federal level, like a federal housing strategy and what mm-hmm. kind of an impact that could have, and then be involved in community actions or activities that address all of those issues on different levels.
Awesome. Well, Fiona, thanks so much for your time.
No problem, and thank you very much for having me.
All right, take care.
Thanks, yeah, bye. Bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but stay tuned for more News 101 on a beautiful International Women's Day. From 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., CITR will celebrate International Women's Day with 12 hours of programming and music chosen by and featuring female-identified voices. Feminist artists and organizations will be highlighted as we challenge gender norms and play some killer tunes. This event also concludes CITR's 2013 Fun Drive. Your donations will help us support groups and voices that have been marginalized by the mainstream media. Submit your questions, suggestions, and testimonials at arts@citr.ca.
Here at CITR, we're
Moontan Nocturnal, vinyl-consuming animals drifting easy through friendly space.
And we're
the Villains.
And
Nardwuar, a human serviette from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
We're
dark space punctuated by planets.
And we're
Patrick Swayze.
And we're
God, the Devil, Hell, Heaven! Do you understand? Finally!
But CITR is not a
commercial radio station.
Which means we need the help of listeners like you. Donate to CITR's 2013 Fund Drive, February 28th to March 8th. Our goal is to raise $30,000 to help purchase new soundboards for all three studios. To donate, call 604-822-8648. That's 604-822-8648. Or go online to citr.ca. And thanks for supporting community radio.
Welcome back to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us on International Women's Day. Our next piece is one put together by our co-director Morgan Yee, focusing on the pro-choice and pro-life protests on campus today.
All right. Welcome to News 101. You are in charge of the Genocide Awareness?
I'm the president of Lifeline UBC, which is a pro-life club on campus.
So can you explain, you know, the basic premise of your argument? Mm-hmm.
So basically, we're here today to try and show the injustice that is going on in our country 300 times a day with the case of abortion. So abortion is completely legal in our country through all 9 months of pregnancy and is funded by province, but in BC it's fully funded by the government. And so we're here today to try and show people what actually goes on in our country, because as Martin Luther King said, if something remains invisible, it eventually becomes tolerable. So we're here to basically show what is actually going on. And that's why we're using the images that a lot of people unfortunately find disturbing, which we find disturbing as well, because they are really disturbing. They're shocking. They're horrendous to look at, because you see the blood, you see the little hands of the babies, and you look at that and you get this emotion stuck in you, like, what is going on? But unfortunately, that is what abortion actually looks like. That's the reality of what we are doing in our country.
Now, do you find that the very polarizing images, do you find that that helps your cause, or that that tends to turn people away?
There's mixed reaction, obviously, as there is with any campaign that you have. There's mixed reaction to other graphic campaigns. Graphic campaigns aren't just used by the pro-life movement. They're used in multiple things. You see, you know, black lungs shown on cigarette packs. You see, they've done in the Fraser Valley, because meth is a big problem, they have very graphic campaigns for meth. And they've actually been working. We've seen that they've worked. And the reason why we choose the images is because we are following after other social reformers. So, for instance, in the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King required that the media was always present at their events. He required that images were taken, that pictures were taken of what's happening. And that's how we have so many of those great images that you see today in different museums and different archives, mm-hmm. of, you know, the water from the fire hydrants being sprayed on, you know, practicing like peaceful civil protesters, or the dogs being put on them. All of those things, we see these images eventually led to social reform. And so we have the exact same premise as Martin Luther King did, and we follow after those social reformers that have used images in the past to see social change. And we wish for public opinion to change on this particular issue, because although people think it's a dead issue, it's not a dead issue, and it happens too often for us to leave it as something that's not spoken about on our campus.
Now, are you expecting any trouble from the pro-choice? Because I know in the past there have been some altercations, and I see that there's a lot of security guards around. So are you guys expecting any trouble? Or
No, we don't expect any trouble. Since about 3 years ago, so in 2010 now, we were fully censored at that Genocide Awareness Project that we did. However, since then, it's been pretty peaceful at the preceding Genocide Awareness Projects. There's been a couple incidents, people just pushing over the sign, stuff like that, but we don't expect any problems. The protesters, we appreciate that they're there. We want everyone to have an opinion in this debate. We want it to be a dialogue. And so we appreciate that there's both sides present on our campus, and that both sides can view their opinions and voice them.
To showcase this on Women's Day, what are your reasons for that?
Well, it ends up working out that it's on International Women's Day a lot of the time. It's part of it is because of Storm the Wall. They have to put the sand in, actually, for it takes up part of the plaza. So we've been doing it pretty regularly on International Women's Day. The reason why International Women's Day is actually probably the best day for it is because it is a major issue for women. And we at Lifeline and everyone in the pro-life movement realizes that we believe that women deserve better than abortion. They don't need to go through this. We're not just focusing on the children here. Like, they are a victim in this, obviously, and that's an obvious way to look at it. But there's also women that are being affected by abortion. We're very blessed to have one woman with us today that has had an abortion, has come to regret it, and tries to talk to other women about, you know, what goes on in that actual procedure and not just what they think happens. Because unfortunately, most of us just aren't educated on this particular issue. And so we really understand the whole point of us being out here is to educate and to create dialogue. So International Women's Day is a place where we see that this is a big issue, because it is a women's issue. It's also a man's issue. There's men that, you know, they get lost a lot in this debate, even though, you know, they're the father of children that are in this question, are we able to have abortions or not? But that being said, the other thing that we really are starting to see now, unfortunately, is gender selection abortion. So sex selective abortion is a big thing that's happening in our country. And 92% of Canadians, the recent poll said 92% of Canadians were against sex selection abortion, but we have no laws against it in our country. And so in our world, there's approximately 200 million baby girls missing due to sex selection abortion. And we see that sex selection abortion does happen, aborting boys because women want girls, but for the majority of cases, it's girls being aborted simply because they're girls. And I think that that issue in particular is crucial that we're here on International Women's Day, because it's a tragedy that in our day and age we cannot say that women and men are equal and that women deserve just as much of a chance to live.
Is GAP affiliated with any religious groups?
No, GAP is put on through a project from the Center for Bioethical Reform, the Canadian Center for Bioethical Reform, and we at Lifeline UBC, which is the pro-life on campus, as I said, we put it on. Lifeline UBC is not affiliated with any religious organization. We are not religiously affiliated. We're completely secular. Abortion does not need to be a religious issue. You can argue it completely from a scientific and philosophical standpoint, and so religion doesn't really come into play in any events that we do.
Well, thank you very much, and happy International Women's Day.
Happy International Women's Day to everyone, and thank you for coming out to GAP.
And now we'll hear a rebuttal from the pro-choice speakers that Morgan talked to.
Welcome to News 101. So I see you're in charge of the International Women's Day pro-choice booth.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about the pro-choice campaign?
Well, I'd say it's not necessarily a campaign, but more of a presence on campus. And I guess it's just reaffirming the fact that women do have the right to choose and reaffirming the right that it is a legal right. So the fact that this group, the Genocide Awareness Project, is allowed to be on campus and allowed to have these really triggering images just sparked us to do more of a celebratory, you know, celebration of women and celebration of our bodies that we have autonomy over, and that we have legal autonomy over, and we have, you know, the right to choose. So I guess it's like not your traditional protest. It's not like screaming or chanting, which I'm totally fine with. But this is more of a, hey, it's International Women's Day, which means we're going to celebrate women, which happens to also mean celebrating choice.
Now, are you guys planning anything then? I know in the past there's been some altercations between pro-choice and GAP. Are you guys planning anything more extreme? Or
I'm actually not one of the organizing crew behind the protest. However, I think a lot of us would like to do something a little bit more that, like, really displays our frustration with the fact that this group is here. Like, we want to do more, but the fact that there's, like, four security guards standing around us, making sure that we can't even walk around with the signs that we're holding. I think everyone's a little cautious, especially since last year somebody did get arrested for, like, just sitting beyond the boundary that we're given. So I think there's some cautiousness, but I don't think it's out of lack of will or lack of intention or anything. I think we would like to do more, but we're kind of like, yeah, there's security guards everywhere.
I know that the GAP project has a lot of very graphic images. I'm assuming that you guys have some issues with the broadcasting of these images to the public.
Totally, yeah, absolutely. That's kind of one of the major issues that we have with the Genocide Awareness Project. I mean, the very name itself is indicative of their logic, which is comparing abortion to genocide, historical genocide, like the Holocaust, Rwanda, Wounded Knee. They have a picture of a black man being lynched. And the thing about these is, about the equation of these two things, is that these genocides are systemic institutionalized oppressions, and they are a result of, like, white supremacy and of fascism and of, like, the systemic, you know, racial othering of these other groups. Whereas abortion comes from a need of women who are, it can come from anywhere, but a lot of folks who need abortions are, like, low income, are underage, have been survivors of sexual assault and have no other option. And just comparing the two is not only a logical fallacy, but it's also appropriating these real cultural genocides that people have lived through and that their families are still getting over the trauma of. So it's wrong on multiple levels. Like, on multiple levels, is it kind of, like, not cool to have on campus? Yeah.
Kat, do you have anything else? Oh, and then petition.
Oh, the petition's right. I can talk about it.
Yeah. So if people want to get involved in, you know, in the pro-choice, let's call it the movement,
yeah.
Is there anything that you could suggest they do?
Specifically for the UBC campus, the Genocide Awareness Project comes every year on International Women's Day, and Yeah, so they do plan it on International Women's Day, so that's why we have this plan. But there is a petition going around, and the petition is specifically about the images themselves. I think a lot of folks who are maybe not sure about the issue are concerned about freedom of speech, and I think that the images themselves are kind of taking away from that. Because they're just impacting people right away without giving them the chance to, like, decide whether or not they see them. So the petition is strictly saying, like, we don't want these images anymore on campus. And that's going around. There's an online version as well as a written version. Yeah, and if you want to get even more involved, you can send a personal email and, like, complain about your own, like, as a student or as a faculty member or whatever, you can complain that you were personally harassed by the images and make it more of a personal level. So there's, like, a few things you can do.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, and, you know, happy International Women's Day.
Yeah, you too.
Okay.
Awesome.
And thanks to Morgan for conducting those interviews, and to both, I think it's GAP on campus, and I'm not sure what... It's UBC Pro-Life group. And the UBC Pro-Choice group for those interviews today. And that is our program for today, which is March 8th, International Women's Day. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts, so if you would like to share your comments or get involved or give us a hot news tip, you can contact us through our email, news@citr.ca. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/news. For more independent news, join us on Monday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Claire Eagle.
And I'm Jamie Hoholuk. Today's show was produced by Claire Eagle. From the entire news team at CITR, thank you for listening. And coming up next, a special International Women's Day interview with enterprising woman making art, conducted by art director Megan Thomas, right here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Karen, thank you so much for coming.